And so I embark and try to create some podcast again for some reason, but I should start, I guess, with introducing myself, Emmanuel Bailosis, just a year shy away from that of the legal age. And so I proceed to creating this first episode, I guess. I'm not really prepared or briefed on how to do this whole episode categorizing. Yeah, but I would just like to proceed over some interesting observations that I have made in my observations or criticisms or commentary, or more of my comments on certain passages in the works of Thomas Jefferson. We're not going to talk necessarily about the content or the meaning that is being relayed by these certain passages, as I have done so already in my Tumblr account at the same username handle, which is always vbailosis, thebailosis. So in this podcast, I'll just be talking about this interesting grammatical situation, phenomenon, in which I would refer to as a mathematical concept applied in grammar, as I use this like pretty much all the time, since it's really convenient when it comes to trying to express yourself in this certain language, which so happens to be the English language. Alright, kind of ran out of breath there, but I proceed to this certain passage written by Thomas Jefferson in the year 1826, if I recall correctly, during his dying days, as stated by the book Thomas Jefferson and Democracy, as edited or compiled by Saul K. Padover. I'm sorry if I butchered the name, but you get the point. Okay, so in this quote, we have this long rambling rant over Thomas Jefferson's thinking or Thomas Jefferson's thoughts over Europe. And as I will be talking about this specific grammatical phenomenon, I'll just proceed to quote the whole passage and go over this thing that I would like to discuss. Quote, "While in Europe," he relates, I often amuse myself with contemplating the characters of the then reigning sovereigns. Louis XVI was a fool, the King of Spain was a fool, and of Naples the same. They passed their lives in hunting, the King of Sardinia was a fool. The Queen of Portugal was an idiot by nature. And so was the King of Denmark, the King of Prussia. Successor to the great Frederick was a mere hog in body as well in mind. Gustavus of Sweden and Joseph of Austria were really crazy, and George of England was in a straight waistcoat. These animals had become without mind and powerless. Alright, so here comes this very interesting quote at the last of the passage, as this what has been kind of trimmed to summary by the compiler, so Mr. Padover. We observe this last sentence pertaining to these characters in history, specifically the sovereigns or the monarchs, where Thomas Jefferson describes them as animals that have become without mind and powerless. Right, I lost a little bit of breath there, but I am here talking about not the content, but the interesting phenomena that I observe here. These animals had become without mind and powerless. So this is our, I'd say, clause or sentence of interest, as we see some kind of confusing parts in terms of subject-verb agreement, I guess. I'm not so well-versed again with these terms, but I do get to learn it my way around over certain concepts by just simply observing. And so my observance here is kind of interesting, because the term these animals, which should definitely be the subject or the noun, these animals, that's what he's talking about, had become, now he's transitioning into what he would call these animals as such, or so whatever they might be. And in this case, he called these animals without mind and without power. The problem here, as my natural, let's say, Filipino educated, of how I would say, my Filipino English mind would tell me, is that without mind and power would be like the more convenient or the more preferred way of saying this certain sentence, as it's more suited, I guess, to my palate. But as we would go over again, the problem here is about emphasis on what would be referring to which, and where, like, the, as I would put it in juxtaposition to math or the distributive properties, where the parentheses would be placed. So in terms of this sentence, we could either look at it as grammatically incorrect when we consider that these animals had become without as a separate clause to be applied to both the adjectives mind and powerlessness, or no, these aren't adjectives. Well, yeah, well, I guess I'm a bit lost here, but as we can observe, the term without mind is used to describe the certain animals, which of course describes the monarchs at that time, and powerless is also kind of synonymous to without power. And so it also is another group of describing words used to apply to these animals, which are, in this case, of course, again, the monarchs. And so in this sentence, you see, these animals had become without mind and powerless, to me, would sound kind of confusing, since we have already a word, without mind, after become, we have a word already referring to the loss of mind or the loss of thinking, in this case applied to the monarchs. And with that being said, we could also apply the term without not just to mind but to the second term used to apply to the subject as predicates. So that is, in this case, power. Mind and power are both applicable to the subject, which in this case are animals. Yeah, these animals, quote unquote, these animals. And so now that we have both of these predicates portrayed or presented in a way that is deductive, you know, presented in a way that is not present, we could use the term without, both for mind and both for power, like distributing this certain quality placed beside this certain word, this certain predicate, that would further specify the way of describing the subject. And it's quite interesting that in both the predicates mind and power, the writer, Thomas Jefferson, known to be a very good one, although not in terms of actual speech or speaking, has decided to individually create a form of, let's say, a reduction. I'll use the term reduction in terms of specifying or becoming precise in the kind of qualities that he would like to attach to a certain predicate, which in this case is mind and power. And so I could go first with my instincts and interpret the powerless as under the influence of this quantifier, as I would say, or something this important word, adverb, I say. No, it kind of, yeah, functions like that, but I would think that the clause had become without, would distribute itself and apply both to the adjective mind and powerless. And so it kind of makes sense to me. That is how I would write things. But it also is an eye-opener to think that we could also put parentheses, or we could also think of it in another perspective, with had become without mind and powerless. So instead of thinking that had become without would be applied to both mind and power, what happens here which makes this sentence a grammatically correct one is that the term without mind and powerless are both separate, in its sense that power is also termed without power, but in a different way, to emphasize the distinction, I guess, between mind and power, in contrast to just applying the term without with both mind and powerless, as Thomas Jefferson here kind of uses these terms, this way of expressing things, in a less conventional manner, at least how I would think of it, in order to, I guess, strike the reader that, hey, they are not just without mind, they are also powerless. And so this brings me to think that, oh, I've been thinking things in a more bland or, let's say, normal or boring way, as I would immediately assume that the template or the formatting of a sentence would be with a certain describing word applied to a number of words or number of predicates. And so it's interesting to note that it always isn't consistently the case, and that there are so many other ways to express the same thing while trying to sound interesting as well, as doing so might also come out as grammatically incorrect, but also effective in terms of driving the message straight to home. And in this case, in the occasion that I have read it like a couple of times before getting that, oh, this is a correct sentence, oh, I've been thinking wrong, and that this has been a new learning for me in terms of, I guess, shifting or fixing the syntax of my sentence and in terms of thinking. And so I create this comparison between mathematics, or the mathematical operation in terms of parenthesis, and language, since in order to understand this sentence and in order to make sense out of it, in order to think of it as a grammatically correct one, in order to do all of that, would take the analysis that you would also use in terms of placing the parentheses right in their place in terms of, for example, a mathematical equation or a mathematical expression in which certain groups of symbols and their operations, respective operations, and the way that they are grouped would be very, very influential on what the outcome will be. In this case, the way that we will group the certain clauses or words in the sentence would greatly affect the outcome. In this case, the interpretation or the understanding in which would deem it either grammatically correct or incorrect. And so that is an important connection that I could see and make when it comes to learning how to group your numbers in math through the parentheses, and also learning how to group these certain words in a sentence in order that it makes sense in some way or another, even if it at first might look grammatically incorrect. And so that is my first episode, I guess, when it comes to saying something at random and thinking about it and sharing it with you all. Again, this is Emmanuel Belosis, and I thank all of you who might ever take the time to listen to this certain observation of mine when it comes to this specific topic. Again, thank you very much and stay tuned.